You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. Today is Monday. That means it is time for the mailbag, Shay. It's time for us to answer the questions of our subscribers. Everything we didn't cover on the last podcast, sometimes what we already did cover, but they want us to go more in depth. So again, if you want to send in questions, you can become a subscriber to the Bengal Tiger for $1 for an entire year, still running that deal, still the best deal. I mean, really, ever, really, the only
there'll deal. There'll be no deals we give better than this. So if you want
unless,
on board,
unless we start handing them out for free, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. But yeah, if you want to send in questions, I usually post them on a Sunday night, asking for questions into the morning, obviously. So it gives you about, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 hours to send in your questions. And we have a pretty good crop today, Shay. So we can get right into it. No sense of wasting time because we do have so many questions, so we can just kind of rapid fire these things off a little bit. All right, let's go. Number one, sent in from Mr. Virgo. How do you think the secondary shakes out with Major Burns being out a few weeks? I know I kind of posed a question in the thread right after the game. I was like, I don't know exactly where they go because it's like Joe Fuscia. And we talked about it a little bit last podcast. Joe Fuscia has been with the team throughout this entire, you know, season, throughout fall, throughout as the games continued to play. He was on the team. He was practicing. He was doing all the stuff, just not with the first team specifically. And so I think he probably just slides into place there. I don't think there's any need to really move Jay Ward back up. I don't think there's a need to do anything haste or even keep Jerick Bernard Converse there. I think you just plug Joe Fuscia in, and then you put Jay Ward back in nickel where he has been. So you have a Joe Fuscia and Greg Brooks secondary. Obviously, you don't love that the fact that his first game is coming against Auburn, you know, who I don't think is good, but it's an SEC opponent nonetheless. But I think you just have to kind of roll with it at that point.
Yeah. So hold that. Tiger 23 asked similar. Are they going to keep JBC, Jerick Bernard Converse at safety, or moving back to corner? I think that I'm with Matthew here, and they have options. Like, they clearly – Bernard Converse got the game ball from Brian Kelly, and he said, look, you know, a real team player to move from corner to safety kind of midweek and into the game, obviously, just because, as you said, they moved Jay Ward down to nickel. Major Burns was out. Matthew Langwa is out. Derek Davis was playing a bit. Sage Ryan a bit. But when you talk about who's going to be the full-time safeties, I don't see a reason to – like, Bernard Converse should stay at corner, right? I mean, he's already been there. That's his natural spot. I think with Fuscia, yes, it is the first game. So, like, you think about, like, oh, do you need to work him in slowly? But I'm with you on the reality that he wasn't hurt. So, I mean, Greg Brooks talked about this after the game. Greg Brooks and – Fuscia are both Louisiana kids, went to Arkansas, roomed together forever at Arkansas, both came here in the offseason, roomed together again. So I'll lean to Greg Brooks on this one because I would think he would know. He said Fuscia is 100% ready. Like, he's out there in practice. It's not like he's got to get adjusted to the feel of how they communicate or how the different guys play. The only thing he hadn't done is play in a game, but he played in probably 30-something games at Arkansas. So – and that's in the SEC. So he's played Auburn before. He's played Auburn multiple times. He's, you know, gotten a feel for SEC games over 3 or 4 years. So all of the, like, if he weren't a guy like that, if he were a transfer that was like a redshirt freshman coming in, my answer probably would be different. But Joe Fuscia's the, they have a lot of transfer DBs that have played places, but I would say Fuscia's the most experienced defensive back they have in terms of outside of Jay Ward. In terms of he's played that much SEC ball, he's in year, what, 5 or 4? When we watched his tape in the offseason, it had a lot of kind of honey badger type elements to it. He wore the 7 at Arkansas. Massive fan. He models his game after that. And I feel like he's a safety you can cover and come down to the box, do whatever you need. I'm a big Joe Fuscia fan. Like, I was a bit surprised that the Arkansas, whatever, like, academic credits didn't transfer. He had to miss a few games. But this is someone that I think boosts LSU secondary in a big way. So I have no reason not to think he wouldn't be out there immediately. And could be looking at a situation where Greg Brooks and Joe Fuscia, two Arkansas kids, are their starting safeties, especially if you want Jay Ward at nickel.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where I had Joe Fuscia ranked when I did those transfers.
Did you have Makai Wingo 1?
I had Jarek Bernard Converse 1. I had Joe Fuscia 2. Miles Frazier, Makai Gardner, Kyron Lacy. So yeah, decent list.
Where's Jaden on this
Greg
list?
Greg Brooks. I did not put Jaden was not on this list.
No, this was done maybe.
This was before Jaden transferred. This was February 6th.
Okay. So these were all the guys that committed and signed. All right. I was about to start picking apart.
Hold on. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I was like, hold on. I had to scroll through the list. I was like, where the heck is happening?
I would say now it would be Jaden.
This is a really good list. Kane was 9.
Calm down, Matthew. You did it in February. We got to have a whole – we're missing some guys here. You got to add –
yeah,
we're getting off topic here on the mailbag. This should actually be a good – we'll just ask someone to mailbag this, and we'll do a story out of this. I would now rank Jaden 1,
yeah.
Wingo 2. Wingo stepped in for Mason Smith when he got injured. He's played really well.
I think I put That's tough. I'd have to think about that for a minute. But I did have Tremont Schwartz at 10, and he's not currently starting. I had Noah Kane at 9. He's not playing a bunch.
Where'd you have Wes Weeks? The man's putting on a clinic as a backup.
Weeks is probably the only one. I had him at 11. I had him at last. Didn't see that coming.
Nope. Yeah, well, good for Wes Weeks.
Good for Weeks. All right. Next question from Tiger Cycline. Daniels was patient in the pocket Saturday and delivered accurate throws. Do you think this continues in SEC play, or was this more of a one-off due to inferior opponent? I think it was largely due to the offensive line protecting the best that it has. I think that was a big thing, because his running and him dropping his eyes was because of the offensive line in a lot of ways. Like, I wrote about this when I did the final lines. Jaden doesn't run because it's designed, or he doesn't run because it's, you know, the easiest thing to do. He runs because a lot of times he feels pressure. And so when that happens, then he's gone. And as we saw against Southern, for the most part, where he only ran 3 times, and as we saw against New Mexico, whenever there's a pocket, he can just stand there. He's fine with that. Now, if there's nothing open down the field and if he feels pressure, then he starts to get a little jittery and starts to go from there. I think it comes down to offensive line play. If the offensive line can block, he'll stay more in the pocket than what he did against Florida State and I think even Mississippi State. I mean, he'll still run, but I think that's just comes with the Jaden Daniels.
No, I'm with you. I think to sum up too, and you talked about this last week on the pod, when you play Southern and New Mexico, they should have no business, you know, in the front 7 getting after your offensive line or getting to your quarterback. And those were the two games where Jaden's rushing numbers were by far the lowest. I mean, he had time. He was going to sit back there. So I'll be interested to see at Auburn kind of how they handle that, how much is designed, how much he takes off early, and how much is kind of just sitting in the pocket and letting things develop. An ongoing discussion point there for sure. Let's see. Famous Amos. Excuse me. This is like it's a deep thought here from Famous.
I know. We got to have a character limit.
So he says, I saw a tweet the other day that talked about how BK, unlike O, spends much of pregame interacting with recruits and big donors on the sidelines before going to the locker room. Now that y'all have been around BK for almost a calendar year, what are some things you've noticed about his methods that stand out? What really seems to be connecting, especially having seen both Les and O regimes? Okay, well, I saw both regimes. Yeah, I would say that the part about O not interact or like, BK spends much of premium interacting with recruits and big donors, unlike O. I wouldn't say that's necessarily true. O probably spent more of pregame interacting recruits with recruits than Kelly did. I mean, he would walk around with guys forever out there. Big donors, I don't know. I guess I'm not paying attention right now to what Kelly does or really what O did every time. But I guess by big donors, they mean maybe big donors who are on the sidelines, kind of walking around before they go up to the suites. That's kind of I see Scott Woodward down there doing that a lot. Maybe not as much the coaches, unless it's kind of a quick handshake and talk. But in terms of what we've noticed about BK's methods that are different to you and that really seem to be connecting, I think the biggest thing for me is this real commitment to accountability across the board. And it's, you know, graduating champions is his kind of motto, but I would say the balance of academics and football is one that they take pretty seriously, and one where even if we go back to like the summer and off season, whenever they named those SWAT team leaders, like that was something, it's basically like they picked a bunch of players. All the players were then responsible for another random group of players, not really based off position or anything like that. I think that's a good way to, it just created all these levels of accountability. Jack Besh talked about it, to where, you know, whatever group, all the groups were then put up there between how they did at practice, their academic standing, all that. And those scores are put up on the big screen. And Jack Besh was like, well, if you're last or down at the bottom, like everybody knows it, your name gets put up there and you're considered a bad teammate. And he's like, and then as a tier leader or a team leader, whatever it was called, SWAT leader, he was like, we would then have to hold the guys accountable for show up to practice on time, show up to workouts on time, show up to class, make your grades, because if you don't, then that makes us look bad as team leaders. And now we're all having to run. And all of the guys sort of, they were taken aback by it, and kind of, I think it took time for everyone to buy in at different levels. But now I think it's pretty evident that it's run from the top down based off of accountability above everything else. And it doesn't seem like they've got any personalities, even in this NIL era right now, that are like tearing the team apart or anything of that nature. It seems like everybody's kind of on the same page, and they had to get through a quarterback battle. They had to get through a ton of transfers who were taking jobs from guys that were already on the team. So there's so many dynamics at play there that I think that just kind of leading with, hey, this is team first before anybody else is really driven home. And I'm not saying that the prior coaches didn't do that. I'm just saying it's clear that that's kind of the Kelly approach, if you will, or at least how he wants to build out this foundation. I think this next one's for me, Maddie B. I don't know. That's a deep thought. I'd have to think more about that one too, to kind of hit on all the nuances. NC Tiger fan, is this for, I think these people want me to answer all their special teams questions because I've just been red hot on them. Overall assessment of special teams play, considering some challenges Saturday. NC Tiger fan gives the examples, missed a field goal, had a kickoff go out of bounds, or penalized multiple times in the return game. It's always something different. It's always something different. Now they're holding in the return game. Now they're kicking it out of bounds. Now they're actually missing field goals, like not getting blocked or whatever, just straight up missing it.
Yeah.
Some of it's coaching, some of it's performance, some of it is kicking-wise, they do not have the talent they had with Cade York and Cole Tracy. Like, we all get that. But even strategy-wise, half the time, like, I'm not sure what's going on. Like, Jack Besh said that he worked none on returning kicks in the preseason, and they came to him on Tuesday and said, you want to try to return punts? It's like, it almost feels like they're scrambling week to week to get this thing fixed. And we'll see where it goes. It already cost, in my opinion, it already cost them a game, though. Like, you can say
they could be 4-0 right now.
It didn't come down to that kick at the end of the Florida State game. There were other mistakes made. Sure, some of the other mistakes were also on special teams, though. So I put that loss on that unit in the first game, at least of why they didn't go to overtime, certainly. So work in progress for me. I mean, I tell you, I don't think that they're not out there trying to coach it, but boy, are they not doing a great job of executing. It's kind of baffling. And Matty B, I think it'll cost them another game. If it doesn't get cleaned up, special teams will cost them another game.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely will. From whether it's a missed kick, whether it's, you know, punt return, whether it's punt coverage, something could go awry here. And I mean, I think if if Jack Besh can just hold down that punt returning spot, that would be a huge boost, because that would at least check one box off. Like, if they can just have him return punts for the rest of the year and him be solid, then that checks off a box that we don't need. But I mean, yeah, we talked about this yesterday on the podcast. I think we covered it well.
Didn't even punt on Saturday, Matty B. LSU didn't. So
yeah,
we go to Auburn and shank a couple punts and give up field position, and all of a sudden that's an issue. We didn't even have to see that element of the game because the offense never had to punt. So
yeah,
I don't know. Ongoing discussion there.
All right, next question. Not going to say the name because we were trying to monetize these videos now. So
I'm not sure that's even a real word.
Have no idea. It's cool. So how should I feel? Florida State wasn't great, but they almost pulled it off. Southern was whatever. Mississippi State outcome was awesome, and the defense seems legit. Without the muff, game is probably much tighter. New Mexico sucks. LSU was dominant. Can we say we've learned much?
Very solid eval from him there. I'd probably agree with all that.
Can we say that we've learned much outside the defense seems good and very encouraging. The secondary isn't a disaster. Auburn is bad. LSU should win, maybe even comfortably. So are we likely going into the Tennessee game not knowing how good or bad this team is? Yes, I think all that's accurate, but I think we know pretty well how good or bad this team is. I think I said it last podcast, I think they are a very, very good defense, borderline elite defense. And offensively, I think we know what we're getting from Jaden Daniels at this point. We know what we're getting from the receivers. The offensive line, yes, is probably the one thing I still don't 100% know, even though they did, you know, play well against Mississippi State and we're good against New Mexico. That's probably the thing going against, you know, SEC defensive lines. We'll have to see. And the run game. I think the run game is still going to be not great throughout the season. So I think if you've just been paying attention to, like, this is what we can pull from this game, this is what we can pull from that game, I think you could piece it together, and I think we have a pretty good understanding of how good this team is.
100%. And I think Haver broke it down well there. He answered his own question, which I agree with both of them. You do too. D does seem legit. The secondary, which I honestly thought, specifically cornerback, would be one of the worst areas on the team, just because I thought they patchworked it with transfers that I was completely unsure of. I guess I'm wrong there. They'll get tested more, obviously, but so far, after a month, they definitely do not look like a disaster, which, as he said, is encouraging. And I'm with you. Like, offense, you already know. They don't have a running back that's getting 15, 20 touches a game. They're giving it to four different guys. They have an offensive line that probably pass pros a little bit better at times and run blocking. Like, there hasn't been a ton of room to run in some of these games, certainly not out of the gates, but it is what it is there. You already knew that you were kind of piecing it together, and you have two freshmen starting it. Like, wait till they play Bam and Will Anderson and them are coming off the edge, right? Like, that's, there's going to be games where it's evident that you've got two guys who are 18 starting an offensive tackle. But they're very high upside players, so they're good. And that's, like, we already knew they had a really talented receiver room. Nothing has changed there. And Daniels, I think we've learned that Daniels can be coached into this offense to be a much more efficient passer than he was ever at Arizona State. And he's not turning the ball over. He's protecting it. His legs are what I thought they were and are getting them out of situations. Like, I think so often before the season, Matty B, people were like, okay, how do you create the offense around Daniel's legs to where there's, like, all these designed runs? And there's some of that, but a lot of Daniel's stuff has been when either just tucking it and running it, or the pocket breaks down, he's going to run it and get you extra yards. I actually really like that element from him. So would I like him to be more patient, see the field? Like, yeah, I'd like him to be the perfect quarterback if I'm an LSU fan. Like, that sounds great, but his numbers are good enough. He's in the high 70 completion percentage, hadn't turned it over. Throws for a couple hundred a game, runs for 100 a game when they're not playing bad competition. So, I kind of say that we do know what they are. And I think it's still about a 7-8 win team.
Yeah.
If everything is right.
I don't think we have another Jaden question. Real quick, I want to mention, before the year, I mentioned a lot of people were talking about the quarterback that can get the ball to the playmakers the best. And I asked the question. I don't remember when I asked her, what podcast or what, when it was, or whether I was even here yet. But I was like, yes, getting the ball to playmakers is important, but what if Jaden Daniels is one of those playmakers? Then he just naturally has the ball in his hands. So that's something I feel like we didn't really consider coming into the year, that obviously is every time Jaden Daniels drops back to pass, he is one of those playmakers. Like, yes, you would love to get the ball out to Kayshawn and Malik and all these guys to let them make plays, but at the same time, Jaden, as we've seen, can be just as potent as those guys. So that is something that I feel like coming into the year, we kind of overlooked, and I'm glad we're getting to see that. So, all right. So if not, I mean, heck, we've learned that, if nothing else. All right, next question from Chiro Tiger. Looking ahead, our defense looks stout and should handle Auburn. I don't expect much out of Auburn's defense. What are their strengths on defense? Where can LSU exploit them? I will have plenty of Auburn preview stuff coming out later in the week, and we'll have all of our preview podcasts and everything coming out. So I cannot answer that. I watched them play Missouri, or I watched the end of the Missouri game. You watched the Missouri game.
Bro, that was the worst football I've ever seen. No, those two teams are terrible. Auburn's awful. Awful.
It was bad football.
I don't even know how many strengths they have. We'll preview it. For real, they're terrible.
We can preview it later in the week.
I said it on the podcast yesterday. The best thing to come out of that game for LSU fans is that Auburn actually won and they didn't fire Harsin, and you have to go over there and play some, you know, an interim coach and a hyped up team. They're dead in the water. I mean, they are bad, bad, which we knew before the season. Nothing has changed there. Auburn's not a good football team.
Yeah. Triple Tiger also asked, LSU started receiving votes in the AP and coaches poll today. Florida State looks to be a strong team. They side note. If LSU has a strong showing against Auburn and Florida State has another good week, does LSU have a say at cracking the top 25 leading into the game against Tennessee? I think so. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter fully because the Tennessee game will determine if you're ranked or not.
Yeah, because if you get ranked 23 and lose to Tennessee, it doesn't matter. You're popped right back out. And if you beat them, you're in. So, I would think that if you beat Auburn, which is not some marquee game, but it is on the road and it's the SEC West, so anything counts there, that you would be moving up. But they're still like, they aren't receiving like tons of votes right now. So, like, I think they're still inching closer to cracking into the top 25. We'll see. I guess it
depends. They've received 7 votes from the AP.
It's not a lot.
Not a lot. Kansas received 125. They're 26.
I actually like Clemson and Wake Forest more than I like Florida State. It's also a side take there about the ACC and winter.
We're talking ACC here. That's a good question. We have another question about Florida State here. Where was it?
It was at the end.
Is FSU legitimately it?
Okay, Mike, shout out Mike Stoklasa.
Stoklasa, is Florida State legitimate, or are they beneficiary of a weak schedule? Has that game changed your prediction for the rest of the season? I watched Florida State. I mean, they beat Louisville. They've won. Yeah, their schedule hasn't been terribly difficult.
They're all right.
I think they're pretty good. I think they're legit. I think
Jordan Travis is good.
Jordan Travis is good, and
we saw that he wizarded them.
Yeah, hopefully he's healthy and he plays. But
it does not change my outlook on the season, though. Like, I thought they were going to beat Florida State and lose to Mississippi State. So if you just flip those, I'm still sitting on 7 wins with a potential for 8. If they go beyond that, that's a hell of a season.
Yeah. All right, next question. Raspberry 4. I could be mistaken, but I thought I saw some 4 wide receiver sets on Saturday. Are they adding those to the playbook as the team becomes more consistent in execution? It's hard to keep all these wide receivers happy when they only use 3 at a time. I mean, as Brian Kelly's talked about before, they use 11 personnel a lot. So 1 tight end, 1 running back. You're always going to have a running back on the field for them. And then they always like pairing that with a tight end because they like to be able to block. And even though I don't think Mason Taylor's a good blocker, they like having him out there to block. So at times. So, I mean, yeah, they definitely use some 4 receiver sets at times throughout the game on Saturday, and I think they've used them even before that, but I think they'll continue to do that and continue to use it. But sometimes in those sets, you know, Mason Taylor's obviously out there as flanked out in the slot or on the edge or something like that, so in case they want to move him in. So I don't think it's anything crazy, but yeah, I think that's pretty much what they've been doing.
I'm I'm pulling up the stats here so I don't misspeak, but I actually think I'm right here because I watch the games like everybody else that's listening. So maybe it's just more something that I'll point out to see if everyone is kind of feels the same way I do. Let's see, current stats. My point here is going to be I actually think, despite only having three receivers out there and talking about keeping everyone happy, that they spread the ball around a good bit.
I mean,
Receiver.
especially
All
since they
right.
only have eight scholarship receivers, and one of those is Landon Ibieta, and Chris Hilton has been recovered
Okay.
from injury.
I'm a little off here. Neighbors has taken a heavy target share now. So he's got 20 catches and next most is 13. But then you get into a group of 13 for Jarray. This is catches. So 20 for Neighbors, 13 for Jarray, 11 for Brian Thomas, 10 for Butte, who didn't play in one of the games. Mason Taylor has 10 catches. Besh has eight. That's obviously got some outliers to it. He had four last game. He was kind of not out there or wasn't a huge part of the production in the first few games, which they're trying to correct. But point being, Hilton and Lacey would be considered your one, two, three, four, five at this point. If you're
Six
putting
and
Besh ahead of
seven.
them, six and seven receivers, and
Yeah.
they both have seven catches. Hilton's gone over 100 already. Lacey's almost to 100. And
I think
then
they've been
that would
fine.
be it. And Landon Ibieta has still been battling through that concussion in camp and kind of just getting right there. So they're not going to rush him back out there in terms of that. But he's your eighth scholarship receiver. So seven scholarship receivers are involved in every game. Like Kyren Lacy and Hilton play every game, even when it's close. So I actually think that they're doing a good job of kind of keeping everybody involved when you could certainly just lean on about three or four of them, like most teams would.
Yeah, I agree. Raspberry also asked, did Emory Jones play the full game? What was the strategy for Frazier and Bradford sharing snaps?
I think Emory was in the whole game.
I believe so. And then Frazier and Bradford both basically, I
They were,
think they're
yeah, so
trying to
that's the
figure out.
right guard spot, and they were just
I think they're trying to figure out
rotating.
who they want to start.
Bradford started two games, and now Frazier started two games at right guard at least.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you. I think they're just trying to figure it out there. And then I will note, we did see Marlon Martinez get in at center, and even long before he got in, he was taking snaps at center like early in the third quarter on the sidelines. So we haven't seen him play a game yet this year. He's started games before. He's played in like 20 something games at LSU, but it seems like he might be kind of someone they're trying to test out at center. So O-line still has some moving parts, but I think right now that I would guess they probably stick with the same O-line for a third week in a row, unless Bradford moves to right guard.
All right, we still have a lot of questions here, Shay, so let's see if we can get through them.
Well, we already jumped down and knocked some of these out, so let's keep it rolling.
No, we knocked down like two. But all
All
right,
right.
probably redundant question. Do you think they get the ball to Kayshon early and often, considering he seems like he'll play like a man possessed? I mean, I guess I don't know the feeling of having a child or what it motivates you to do, but if it motivates him to catch footballs and run fast, then yeah, get him the ball.
No doubt. What game? He didn't play this state. They kind of got him involved right away. I would think the same goes for Auburn.
Southern too. Yeah. All right. Are they going to keep? Oh, we are. We answered that. Good. Good job. Do you think Savion Jones played his way ahead of Ollie Gay? I believe so. This has been a trending topic on our site and on, I'm
Who
assuming,
is
every
that? Big
site.
D99 right there with the
Yeah, Big
question.
D99. Sorry. Everybody seems to think Savion Jones should start ahead of Ollie Gay, and it's because
So do
Savion.
you. You said so.
Did I say that?
No, you just said he's playing better, which I agree
I
with.
don't think I said that. I don't think I didn't say he should start ahead of him. I'd say it's a competition at this point. I think Savion Jones is a better pass rusher. I don't think Ollie Gay has ever been a dynamic pass rusher. However, there's more to what Ollie Gay does. Ollie Gay is not playing, the B.J. Ojulari role where he's, pass rusher really as his main job. I think part of Ollie Gay's job is also in the run game, which kind of gets overlooked. So and then also I think Ollie Gay, from a leadership perspective, is still one of the captains every single games for a reason. I think Ollie Gay should start. I think Savion Jones has played really well. I think he's a better pass rusher. And Ollie Gay is kind of just a bigger body out there to help him against the run. So I would start Ollie Gay. I think Savion plays plenty. I don't think it matters who starts completely.
100%, and I'm with you on Ollie Gay in the run game. And even when we talked to Savion, he was like, "Man, the one area I've got to work on now is the run game, getting off blockers, you know, setting the edge, whatever it might be. He kind of really drilled down that as
a and I think him at the in, so. I think him at the jack position where when he filled in for BJ last game against New Mexico is kind of more of what I could see him doing in theory. But once he fills out and everything, I think he'll be fine at defense.
I'll say one thing too. I was so sky high on Savion coming out. And now that we're on three, Matthew, I do want to point this out just to give some perspective here. On three's rankings for that class, Savion he was a 5-star with Mason Smith. Like, I don't think people realize that. Like, he was only a 5-star in one place. It was on three, but they had him as the number two. Now we had him as the number two player in the state behind Mason Smith. And that was Chris Hilton, Langlois, Brian Thomas, Age Ryan, Neighbors, Besh. You know, you could go up and down the list of guys who were in the state that year. So, like, he's playing really well, and we're talking about a guy who's got really high upside. Like, I think he's one of the best kept secrets on the team. And I don't think he should be starting right now, but he plays a lot. That you're good to go on that front.
He plays a lot. He'll get plenty of reps. What do you think the best starting linebacker combo is based on the first four games? I think I said it last time. I think I said Baskerville Penn. I think I'll stick with that. Even though, yep. I mean, I don't know. There's no presence when Jones is out there. And I think I've said that before, which might be unfair to linebackers because linebackers are such a product of other things in the defense at times. But I don't know. I just never feel when Mike Jones is on the field, which I don't know. Could just be an indictment on me watching the game. But I feel it at least when Penn in the run game, basketball in the pass game, weeks at times, you know, has shown up. So I don't know. That's probably the two I'd go with. But
is that to get us to say Harold Perkins? I think what they're doing with Harold Perkins right now is perfect. Like, they put him at that edge spot some, or they'll just put him at backer, but just kind of rush him up the middle. Like,
yeah,
as Brian Kelly said, make it very simple for him right now, and that allows him to play fast, and that's what you want out of Harold Perkins.
Yes, like, exactly.
I don't think he should be starting, but play.
Yeah, I think what they're doing, like you said, what they're doing with him is perfect. Just an attacking linebacker, plug him in at times, and just let him create havoc. All right. We answered that one.
I'll take Bourbon and Cheerios. Yeah. Remember when we all wanted Jordan Jefferson, Jennings, Harris to be Jaden Daniels? What Jaden Daniels is, really athletic guy, was accurate, spread the ball around, didn't turn it over. Blah, blah, blah. Something about their day jobs. Okay, I actually agree with the premise here because I've sat through it with all you guys who were listening and watched all those quarterbacks play. I'm higher on Jefferson than I guess that post is, or a lot of people are. But absolutely, like, people need to like, Joe Burrow will cloud everyone's judgment when it comes to a really good quarterback. But, like, Jaden Daniels is better than Max Johnson. Jaden Daniels is better than TJ Finley. Jaden Daniels is better than Anthony Jennings. He's better than Brandon Harris. Like, when you get into these realms of guys like Etling and Daniels, and they're good for different reasons, but they're enough to win games. Like, he's not losing you any games. And he can win you some games because we saw it at Florida State. He was literally the only one who kept them in that game on offense until the final few minutes. So, yeah, I think that Daniels is one of the better quarterbacks that LSU's had across a decade. That's an indictment probably on LSU more than saying Jaden Daniels sets the world on fire, but I'm all for it. I think he does a great job. what's up with this Tiger game?
Questions.
I don't know. What do they say? Roll through real quick. Hold on.
Okay. Just answer real quick. He says, ask, why does the wide receiver route tree seem to change with Nussmeier's in compared to Daniels? I don't think it does, personally. More specifically with Nuss, they run more slants and wide receiver screens, getting the ball to playmakers faster. Jan doesn't seem to have slant screens. Interesting downfield time to develop. I think they simplify when Nussmeier actually comes in. So I think that's why you see more slants and wide receiver screens to let him throw the ball. I think Daniels, they trust more to have those deep, deep developing routes because he can move in case things break down. So, I don't think
we've answered the second one plenty before. I think you're right about that. I think they simplify it when Nuss is in. The second one just asked about Besh in a tight end role. We've talked about this plenty because despite Mason Taylor's inefficiencies, they care more about his development at tight end than they do patchworking Besh, who they view as a receiver.
And I don't think Besh wants to play tight end.
Oh, that too.
I think,
but remember a year ago, Besh was like adamant to say, he's helping out. I'm a receiver. So yeah. I think they're way more invested in Mason Taylor's future than anything like, let's get Jack Besh to go block people this game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we talked about that. I think that would be probably ideal, but.
Will we finally put Besh back on punts and maybe a playmaker or two to return kickoffs? I don't think returning kickoffs is a big deal. Half teams, they play kick it out of the end zone or they'll just let it go back for a touchback. Punt returns, yeah, I would think so. There would be no reason not to play Besh there. He caught everything. Andy took one to the house, got called back, but we haven't seen that from anybody else.
Tiger Gabe.
Kind of re-asked. He was chatting.
All right, last one. Did we answer this one already? Is this even a question?
It's just a debate.
It's a debate. All right. We did it. Boom. Thank you all for sending in your questions. Glad we could get through all of them. Busy day today on the site, Shay. We got McMahon presser. We got Brian Kelly presser. We got Kim Mulkey presser. It's gonna be fun.
And you're doing like a back to back to back here.
Back to back to back. No breaks, all three. I hope there's no break between them. Just come on up, just keep rolling, and I'll be there.
This is your Deion Sanders. I'm gonna play in the NFL and MLB in the same day type thing, right?
Same day. We're covering all of them. I can't wait. Can't wait to see Kim.
Kim's gonna be hot. She'll probably have some opinions on the LSU football team start.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Jeez. They should have just added Jay Johnson in there just for the hell of it. Just throw him in there. Get all the coaches. All right. That's all we have for y'all today. This has run long enough. We hope y'all enjoyed the episode. Let me get my hat. $1 for an entire year still. Bengal Tiger hat. I'm waiting for the day Shay can put this hat on with me. One day that'll happen, hopefully. Until then. We appreciate y'all for joining us. Subscribe on the YouTube. Leave a like, comment, share, all that stuff. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you're listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. And, yeah, thanks for joining us.